Hello everybody, and welcome to the final class of Flow Fundamentals. With me tonight is Stephen Kotler, our Director of Research, and myself, Jamie Wheel, Executive Director. We've got a lot to cover, and I hope that you guys have been having a really worthwhile time conducting your own experiments, digesting the content, and really trying on for size what does it mean to go from having flow in my life accidentally, incidentally, to really bringing flow into all of our lives more deliberately, and not just as our own kind of at-home science experiment, but in service of the work we have to do in the world and in service of fundamentally being and doing at the highest levels possible. So we've got a lot to cover in this final class, a lot of integration as well as a lot of reflection. And so we're going to go ahead and jump in right now, and I'm going to share screens so that you guys can sort of see the slides as we go through them, and then Stephen will be jumping in, and also if you guys as well, as particularly in some of the reflection stages. So if you have pen and paper, pencil and paper, or a keyboard, whatever your preferred means is of jotting down your thoughts, that's great, and I'd say let's jump right in. So the first thing we're going to do is just kind of go back and cover the ground that we have been studying for these last 6 weeks and just make sure that everybody has a sense of how much content, how much information we have actually digested, and then use that opportunity to reflect on those things that are stickiest for us, those things we want to carry forward, and ideally use this class as both kind of integration session from the past 6 weeks and then also kind of mapping our commitments going forward. So one of the first things we want to do is kind of just start where we left off. For you guys that have been going through classes 4 and 5, you will remember that we took quite a bit of time to unpack fundamentally kind of the neuroscience of gratitude and also the practice of gratitude. And potentially, and I think Simon gave us this commentary in Flow Hacker Nation, quite specifically coming from Australia, coming from a place that is not necessarily touchy-feely, is not necessarily, hasn't bought in hook, line, and sinker to kind of San Francisco left coast ethos and perspectives, that kind of understanding of the mechanics behind gratitude, why it might make sense to engage as a flow hack, was helpful, and hopefully it was for others as well. And just want to give Stephen a chance to kind of return back to some of the content that we discussed in the prior classes relating to gratitude and just kind of draw some connections that might be relevant to all of us. Stephen.
Thanks, Jamie. Hi, everybody. Glad you could join us. Hope you had a great time working through Flow Fundamentals. So I want to start by kind of giving you a big picture look at what we talked about in the last class on gratitude. And to understand how gratitude works in the brain, you have to start with the fact that the brain has a kind of giant information processing problem, right? Every second of every day, our senses are bombarded by information. According to contemporary tallies, over 400 billion bits of information are hitting your brain every second. But consciousness, which is the world you kind of really live in, is only 2,000 outputs. So 400 billion inputs, 2,000 outputs. So you're living in a world that is a vastly, 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 vastly reduced picture of reality. Right? And what consciousness, there are lots of different fancy theories about what consciousness is, but at a very practical level, what you're looking at is at the bottom layer, you have information processing. You have information acquisition, so your senses take in data, and you have pattern recognition. You're looking for connections between that information. That's the basic level, the bottom. On top of that, there are a variety of filters, right? The first filter most of this incoming information meets is your amygdala, right? That's one of the oldest portions of your brain. It is your danger detector, right? So the first thing that happens when information comes into your brain is your brain assesses it for, you know, is there a problem? This is hardwired into us. This is why we have phobias, et cetera, et cetera. But this also shows up as what's known as the negativity bias. So Daniel Kahneman, Nobel laureate, psychologist, figured out that, you know, we use heuristics to process information. Heuristics are things like common sense, right? Common sense is a heuristic that allows you to process a huge amount of information very, very quickly, right? Most of the time, these heuristics work great. Sometimes they fail. Then they're called cognitive biases, one of the most powerful ones, as Kahneman discovered, is the negativity bias. It is the product of the amygdala. It means if I show you 9 positive stories and 1 negative story, you're going to remember that negativity, that negative story. That's just how the brain kind of works, right? There are other filters on top of this. Another filter is what we talked about in the last class, the confirmation bias, right? This is a tendency to believe things we already believe and discard the rest. When you start layering these things on top of each other, you start to see how information filters through. With gratitude, right, what you're doing is you are kind of leveraging confirmation bias, right? By practicing gratitude, you are confirming that things are going right to overcome your negativity bias. You're basically getting past that first level of filtering and then messing with, hacking your second level of filtering, right? This helps you maintain a growth mindset. It helps you move forward in the world. It frees up a lot of energy. We see something very similar on a much smaller scale when in action sports. When you are approaching on a mountain bike, say you're approaching a steep object like the rollover that's pictured, you know, in the slideshow that Jamie just showed, right? You have a couple of seconds when you see the object right before you decide what to do. In those couple of seconds, your negativity bias is going to rise up and say, oh my God, right now you're screwed. You have to do this really hard thing. You have a second to not react to that information and decide you can actually like kick into flow in that space before you're going to crash, right? It's either you use that kind of heightened dopamine and norepinephrine, that fear that comes up, to ride into flow, or you crash. Gratitude is the exact same thing happening on a slightly larger scale, and it's a great flow hack.
Perfect.
Jamie, back to you.
Yeah, and you know, in a basic sense, if you guys haven't already felt this, we too are creating a heuristic, or basically a shortcut for sort of more effective flow hacking. And the heuristic involves, at least, you know, it's storytelling, right? And one of the stories we're telling involves kind of ourselves, the noble flow hackers, and our arch enemies, the amygdala and the prefrontal cortex, right? Sort of almost like the lizard brain on one side and the neurotic, you know, the neurotic Woody Allen on the other. Those are kind of our standing tropes. And obviously that's playing fast and loose with the much more nuanced neuroscience underneath, but hopefully thinking of things in those terms literally does become a helpful shorthand. It's something that lets us that lets us work with those two tendencies, right? The ability to either retreat into fight or flight or to overthink and become more useful and basically cut down the billions of bits of processing into the functional chunks of thousands that we can actually process in our waking self. So given that, we are now going to move forward to the focused breathing exercise. And in fact, I'll tell you what, you guys may be looking at, there we are. I'm going to go to here, and we're going to revisit. If you guys remember that focus calibration test way, way back in class one, where we introduced the notion of, hey, the average American adult, and I'm sure Europeans and Australians are far, far more advanced, but the average American adult is only 9 seconds of attention span. The average goldfish is 8. And we wanted to give you guys the opportunity to test yourselves. So the question will be, after 6 weeks and after doing all these practices, some of you may have just glanced at the practices, some of you have just sort of read over them intellectually but never actually engaged them, but for those folks that actually practiced the practices, and if you remember, we emphasize that from the get-go, no one can do your push-ups for you. So for those of you that have been doing your push-ups, coming back to the focus calibration test now should be at least a data point on what have I learned, how might I be getting more capable. So what we would like folks to do is to do the box breathing, which we, again, have introduced in prior classes, but if you guys remember, it's just inhaling for a fixed count. In this case, we'll start with 5, exhaling for the same, holding for the same, inhaling for the same, and basically that makes your box. And for anybody that's interested, one of the students in our very first Flow Fundamentals class, the Flow Fundamentals beta that came out right after The Rise of Superman was launched, was so motivated and inspired that they actually went so far as to build and release a Flow box breathing app that is available on the iTunes store. So if anybody would like to download that, play with that in the future, have it available on your phone, you can absolutely do it. But what I would invite now is for everybody, what we're going to do is just do probably 30 seconds of box breathing to prime ourselves. And then we would encourage you, once you just kind of have that comfortably ticking over, we're then going to do the focus calibration test again and see where folks come up. And Michael will post the polls of where did you come in on the 0 to 10, 10 to 20, all the way up to 50 to 60. Okay? So if you would all just go ahead and sit up straight in your chair on your kind of on your sit bones of your pelvis, back straight, shoulders back and relaxed. Eyes forward, and we're just going to consider this a warm up, and we're just going to begin breathing now. So go ahead and inhale, 2, 3, 4, 5, hold, 2, 3, 4, 5, out, 2, 3, 4, 5, hold, 2, 3, 4, 5, in, 2, 3, 4, 5, hold, 2, 3, 4, 5, out, 2, 3, 4, 5, hold, 2, 3, 4, 5, in, 2, 3, 4, 5, hold, and hopefully you should be calibrated by now, 4, 5, out, 2, 3, 4, 5, hold, and this is the hardest one typically, 4, 5, last round, in, 2, 3, 4, 5, hold, 2, 3, 4, 5, out, 2, 3, 4, 5, hold, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now just go ahead and catch your breath. Resume normal breathing if for any reason you were slightly out of whack on that or it was creating a bit of a stress response. And we are now going to switch over to the actual focus meditation itself. And please go ahead and sit up straight. And what we would encourage you guys to do is rather than simply sit there trying to think of not having a thought, go ahead and deploy box breathing. Again, this is, you know, this technology is not complicated. It's existed for centuries. Most recently, it's been identified and affiliated with the Navy SEALs, who have been using it to basically downregulate their physiology, which we've discussed with you guys. Consider it the same thing. Consider, like, this is a practice situation where you could either be stressed, meaning I'm not getting enough breath, or distracted, I'm trying not to think about having a thought. Try and combine the two. Try and engage, like, give your prefrontal cortex something to do, meaning counting the breaths. Give your physiology what it needs, right, oxygen in a controlled and disciplined way, and see if that combination can help us get to a place of being in the unjudged or undecided deep now. Okay, so with that said, we're going to just have the last 5-10 seconds of instructions and then jump straight in.
There are several words we use in this game which must be understood precisely in order that the game be played correctly. Thought, as distinct from feeling or emoting, is the conscious manipulation of symbols, pictures, or sounds, which ultimately creates some form of meaning. A thought is any mental process which creates meaning. If a picture of an elephant pops into your mind, we call it a thought. If a memory of your mother comes to you, it's a thought. If a question you could repeat to someone arises, it's a thought. Get the picture? The moment you notice a tangible thought or image, open your eyes and notice the count. Feeling. Any tactile sensation can be called a feeling. Feeling can be generated externally through the skin and other sense organs, or it can be generated internally through emotions. Feelings are a perfectly acceptable part of this experience. You can feel things all over your body and around your body without ever having a thought about it. But the moment a sensation creates a particular thought, that is when your turn is over. The goal of the 60-second meditation is to hold all thoughts and images out of your mind for a full 60 seconds. The goal is not to play one time so you can know what your attention span is in comparison to others. The goal is to play again and again and watch your attention span increase every single time. The purpose of this game is not to win bragging rights, but to master yourself 1 second at a time. The best way to win is simply to play again. You will improve your score over and over, systematically gaining more and more control over your mind. And now we will begin. Close your eyes and find a comfortable position. Visualize the numbers 3, 2, and 1 in your mind as you hear them spoken aloud. After the number 1, the game has begun. Clear your mind completely for as long as you can. The moment a thought or picture enters your mind, open your eyes and remember the number on the clock. Write this number down somewhere safe. Then watch the results to see where you fit in the focus spectrum. And now we begin.
Box breathe.
3, 2, 1. How long did you make it? The focus scale is a subjective scale that will allow you to track the improvement of your focusing abilities over time. Your score should not be considered as an objective rating of your potential, but merely a convenient measuring tool to track your progress. 1 to 10 seconds, unfocused. 11 to 20 seconds, mild focus. 21 to 30 seconds, intermediate focus. 31 to 40 seconds, advanced focus. 41 to 50 seconds, undivided focus. 51 to 60 seconds, master focus.
All right. So let's go ahead and check and see how everybody's done. Michael, if you would post the survey, and everybody can weigh in on how you did. And if anybody's not seeing it, go ahead and click on Polls, the tab on the top right. And that should display the public poll. How long were you able to hold the state? Go ahead and vote. And we'll give it about another 10 to 15 seconds. And please go ahead and put in your content. And then we will go ahead and end the poll. Okay, so we had a good slug in the 11 to 20 range, and then we had fairly even distribution, nobody in the 0 to 10, so you know we just stomped some goldfish. Well done, guys. And then even distribution, a bit of a blip there on the 21 to 30, but if you got over that hump, then even distribution through the rest of the curve. That's great, and I would certainly encourage folks to continue doing that. And not only is that good, just, you know, respiratory control having an awful lot to do with how aware we are, how often, particularly in high-stress situations, but even the bigger picture, which is, can I give my monkey mind some balls to juggle so he doesn't pelt me with rotten fruit, right? Is there a way to occupy those parts of ourselves that are primed and ready to overthink and give them something simple to do such that we can spend more time in that unconscious competence that defines the flow state. So with that, we're going to toggle back over to our slides, and we can continue going from there. Good job, everybody. Okay. So, Stephen, what I would propose is that what we're going to do now is just kind of go back and both refresh and add a little bit more additional commentary on a couple of the big ideas, the biggest sort of concepts or theories, models that we have introduced during our six-week program. I want you guys just to kind of let this stuff wash over you, like both look back and say, what did I remember naturally? What am I remembering with a little prompting? And what is actually I'm kind of almost hearing with fresh ears? That's all, those are just good checks. And what we're going to conclude this section with is literally what's sticking for me. Because if you remember back at the very beginning of the program, we sort of were talking about what does it mean to practice flow. And, you know, the trouble is we don't get to just do it the same way we try and practice everything else, which is sort of gritting our teeth with this sort of Protestant work ethic. We're going to make ourselves better. What I believe I can achieve is like, it's actually, you know, it requires us, as if we really believe that flow is autotelic, that flow has these natural drivers, then I have to be a little softer. Remember we talked about kind of forcing the feel versus feeling the force, or that Led Zeppelin joke about, you know, being tight but loose. The idea is how do we strike that sweet spot between trying to do these things because we value them, but not trying so hard that we're just grinding it out ourselves. So that'll be another one, another part of our reflections. All right, so Stephen, I'm going to move on here, and the trick is I'm not sure everybody is going to get to have full screen display of this flow cycle once you start talking, but if we can just kind of give everybody a moment to reorient themselves, and then we'll switch over to you. So Stephen's going to kind of just walk us through this, but not necessarily in the same way that I did. I think he's going to focus on and unpack things with a little bit more color and a few different insights. So if you guys remember the four-stage cycle, the struggle into release, into flow itself and recovery, and then the varying neuroelectric, neurochemical, and in some cases neuroanatomical components that typically follow us around that wheel. So with that, Stephen, and you want to kind of just lend us some final commentary and blazing insights here.
Thanks, Jamie. So let me get my picture off. There we go. Thanks, Jamie. So the flow cycle, if you remember back into the early classes, out of kind of everything we can teach you about flow, 15 years of doing this, this turns out to be kind of the number one flow hack, right? The most effective thing we can teach you, and it's because it's a map. And when you know where you are on this map, you know what you have to do next to get more flow, right? It's that simple. And the first stage, right, the goal we're trying to get to is the transient hypofrontality of the flow state itself, where the prefrontal cortex shuts off. But we start out in the most hyperactive prefrontal mode. We start out in struggle. Struggle is a loading phase. We are loading and then overloading the brain with information. It's the first stage in the flow cycle. And think about it this way. If you're an athlete, if you're a baseball player, this is the time you are learning how to keep your eye on the ball. You are learning how to swing the bat at the ball. For a writer, for me in this stage, you know, I'll be at the front end of a book. I'll be doing tons of research, doing hundreds of interviews, reading books, reading papers. I've got Venn diagrams, structures, and ideas all over my office, right? And I'm taking in more and more and more information. You really want to take yourself right up to the brink of madness, right? Right to the point where you think, if I take one more piece of information into my brain, I am just going to absolutely explode. You want to almost make yourself totally crazy with it. And the secret along the way in struggle is just remembering that you're in struggle and remembering that the frustration is par for the course. You're supposed to be frustrated in struggle. I mean, literally because you are overloading working memory, right? You can only hold, on average, about 4 items in the brain. The top level is 9, but those are usually only lists and very small things. Most of us can only think about 4 things at once, and then the brain is overloaded. In the struggle, you are overloading that system. You are getting taking into the brink, and then you move into the next stage, which is release. Right? What's going on here is between struggle and release, you are trading conscious processing, your prefrontal cortex, for subconscious processing, right? And you are doing this because the subconscious is far faster, far more energy efficient, and has essentially an unlimited RAM capacity as opposed to like holding on to 4 items, right? We don't know how much stuff the brain can hold at once, but we basically think it's unlimited. So you're making this trade to do that You have to take your mind off the problem. Move into release. You literally have to start gardening. You have to go for a long walk. Albert Einstein famously used to row a boat in the middle of Lake Geneva and stare at the clouds, right? You take your mind off the problem. But the only thing you don't want to do here is watch TV, because TV actually messes with your brainwaves and actually blocks flow. So second stage is release. Third stage is the flow state itself, right? You get to be Superman for a little while, and then the trouble starts all over and on the back end, right? On the back end of the flow state, there's this enormous high. It's followed by a deep low, right? You have moved into the recovery phase. The neurochemicals that underpin flow, they're expensive for the brain to produce. You have limited supplies. You can burn through them fairly quickly. And it takes a little while to take in the necessary vitamins and minerals and whatnot to reproduce those neurochemicals. So it's very, very deep low. And yet the trick is to actually use that time to recover, to let your body recharge. If you don't, if you get stressed out in recovery, what's going to happen is your brain's going to start producing cortisol, the stress hormone, and it's going to block learning. So the long-term benefit of the flow state, the accelerated learning we see, that's not going to take place. You'll get the short-term benefits still, but you won't get those long-term benefits. Also, if you're really hung up in recovery, right, if you're gripped when you're in recovery because you feel really mortal and it feels bad and there's no way around it, it does feel bad, you are not going to be able to move from recovery smoothly into struggle, right? You have to go from this deep low of recovery into this serious fight that is struggle, and you're going to need your wits about you to do it, so you're going to have to recharge. And in fact, you know, we talk about in Rise of Superman that there's this incredible accelerated uptick in performance in action and adventure sports because these people have become some of the best flow hackers on earth. Right. Some of this is they've literally surrounded their lives by the flow triggers that we talked about in earlier classes. Another bit is they have recovery built into their sports. It's so fundamental, but their sports are weather dependent. Big storm rolls in, everybody goes skiing, everybody goes surfing. Storm passes, everybody takes a couple days off, and it's just built into the cycle. So they were honoring recovery basically sort of automatically in the action and adventure sports community. It allowed them to move smoothly through the flow cycle and into the next flow cycle, which is the unlocking move, right, that allows you to accelerate the amount of flow in your life and really start moving that up a notch. So understanding the flow cycle and kind of respecting and honoring and knowing where you are, right, gives you the fastest way through the flow cycle. So what this tells us, right, the big metaphysical, you know, thing is bliss junkies are wrong. There's no, you don't get to live in an endless flow state. It doesn't work that way. There's precise neurobiology underneath each stage. But if you can master these stages, you can move through all four of them very quickly and restart your next flow state with shorter and shorter gaps between them.
Nice. Thank you,
Steve.
Back
to you, Jamie.
Yeah, yeah. And that reminds me, I mean, just as you're describing, you know, the cyclical nature of action sports athletes, right? It seems to bear a significant resemblance to kind of, you know, early hunter-gatherer kind of patterns, particularly for men, right, which were often gathered around hunting and fighting. And in between, they actually sat on their asses and did a ton of bullshitting and storytelling, right? And so if you take a look at those activities, hunting and combat, as potentially both very, you know, high risk, high focus, and either flow or die kind of situations, it would make sense. And in some respects, you know, action sports athletes have just, in this world, which, you know, in our contemporary Western 21st century high-tech commodified world, most of us are zoo animals. So adventure sports athletes have almost chosen to go, you know, to dial back the clock and bump up the struggle phase of their life. Whereas most suburban males, right, go down to their man cave in the basement or the living room, they turn on Sports Center and cable TV, and they sit there. So they're doing all the bullshitting and the storytelling, effectively, without any of those peak experience challenges. So we're kind of in the sort of, you know, cavemen are from Mars and cavewomen are from Venus. We're still sort of acting out a very old pattern here. It's just that unless you go and seek it out in the realm of what we call sport or other elective activity, life has become too easy to provide us with as many overt opportunities to drop into the flow cycle itself. All right. So the next one is this notion of the now. And this was this is more recent. So if you guys should still remember this one pretty clearly. But just to kind of go back to our two good friends, the amygdala and the prefrontal cortex, and to check for ourselves, hey, when I'm not in the deep, absorbed present, where am I going? Where is the tendency for myself? So, I mean, you guys can pretty much get this idea at a glance, and hopefully it makes, you know, fairly intuitive and logical sense. But the question is where do you tend to go? So ask yourself, and, you know, if you have the opportunity, just punch into the chat bar, where is your default spot? Because it could be, you know, it could be past or future. First check out that light switch. Do I spend more time thinking about, in fact, I did hear a good description of old age. It was where your regrets outweigh your dreams. And that's not a bad little insight there. But for most of us, where do we spend our time? It could be fearful futures, to Stephen's earlier point, right, about negativity bias. I ignore all the good things that are happening. I don't force myself to bask in them, to burn in those neural networks like I could, and certainly as we invite and encourage you guys to. Instead, I discard it. I see it simply as threat, no threat. And when it's no threat, I don't allow myself to steep in it. I simply discard it. It's a no threat, and I go looking for the next threat. In which case, if that's true for you, that's a fearful future that's pulling you forward. Now, the flip side is, you know, what else is going on? It could be, particularly for anybody who's experienced any form of deep trauma. I mean, in some respects, trauma or post-traumatic stress is almost by definition a prior experience that continues to trigger painful pasts for yourself, right? Both of those, that's the amygdala diagonal. And alternately, if we take a look at the PFC, or the prefrontal cortex diagonal, that's where we, in some respects, are dissociating from the present, because we find elements of it either distasteful or intolerable. I literally can't be here. And so, and this is where there's, you know, everything's going to be, you know, different when I paint my masterpiece, right? We joked about that with the lines from that old Dylan song. So check for yourself and go ahead and, you know, follow through with what it just like we looked at, what's my flow profile, what's my type or tendency, what are my typical access points to flow? Let's also, as another kind of peel a layer back on the onion, what's my relationship to time? Where do I typically hang out? Where's my go-to spot in the timescape if it's not the now? And then let's just remember what's going on in our body that puts us in the now. And transient hyperfrontality, that's nice to know, meaning my prefrontal cortex goes a little quiet for a while. That's cool, but I don't necessarily have direct access to that lever. But what I do have access to is, can I pay attention to breath, just as we were just training with, even on the simplest level, with that box breathing exercise? Can I, so fundamentally, can I oxygenate? Because shallow, constricted breathing, I tend to not have any good air exchange in the bottom third of my lungs, right? And interestingly, I don't know if you guys have come across this stat, but something like 80% of children who are diagnosed with learning disabilities are hypoxic, meaning they have low air exchange. So we do all kinds of crazy blunt instrument interventions, pharmaceuticals, and other things, when as much as anything else, if we taught them like abdominal muscle tone, and respiratory control, we would be along with, their brains would be working better if they just had O2. And on a panning back from that, that's the obvious one, you know, oxygen equals life. Optimizing our vitality in general is one of the best ways to avoid both amygdala hijacks and prefrontal cortex daydreaming, although most of it kind of ends up being neurotic amygdala stuff. But if I, instead of trying to solve my emotional problems or my psychological distress at the level I'm experiencing it, meaning psychologically, let me talk about it, let me think about it, let me talk about it to a therapist, let me, you know, dialogue it to death with a partner. What if I just went out and got, you know, 3 hours of bright sunshine and vitamin D? What if I just went for a run? What if I just drank fresh squeezed, you know, organic juices? What if I just said, forget how I think I feel and the reasons I think I feel that way? Let me just go ahead and jack my self-system with good, obvious things that fix me, and then come back to those problems. As often as not, we have a fundamentally different take on them, even though at the time we would have sworn up and down they were intractable and they were quote-unquote true. Okay? And then, you know, I've just been giving a description of what do I do to monitor my self system, meaning let's bump up the vitality. right? Doing all the things we know that are good for us, food, diet, exercise, breathing, right? Even relating. But then on the mental side, how do I unwind from, you know, overthinking things? And we, you know, Stephen gave us some great instructions there. We don't need to go into deep, deep detail on the first, you know, stop, challenge, choose, right? If I'm in a negative loop, if I'm projecting, right? If I am creating a drama story in my head, first one is just notice it. That's huge. Notice I'm not in the current moment. I'm not in the now. I am probably rehashing a painful past. I might even be fantasizing about a fantastic future where I really tell somebody off and it all works and I feel validated, whatever. It doesn't really matter, right? It doesn't matter. If I'm not in the now, I'm not in the now. And anything else kind of is, it's kind of just a deleveraged state to be in. So interrupt the pattern. What can I find gratitude for in the moment? And if you guys remember that piece with Brother David Steindl-Rast, his, you know, one of the first questions they get on gratitude practice is like, yeah, but how can I be grateful for, you know, watching Rwanda on CNN? How can I be grateful, you know, even for the recent round of, you know, police and civilian violence that, you know, at least has been happening in the United States? Well, you can be grateful that we're finally having this conversation. You can be grateful that it hits your heartstrings. You can be grateful that you feel compelled to stand up and participate in whichever part of the dialogue moves you, right? So that there's a way to find gratitude even in, this is again, as Mark Devine, who's founder of SEALFIT and a former Navy SEAL himself, you know, calls about embrace the suck, right? Experiencing gratitude for the present moment doesn't mean it's all unicorns and rainbows. It simply means I am going to stop struggling, pretending or wishing or wanting back to past and futures, right? That it would be something other than what it is. And I can find a reason to be grateful in it. It could be worse, right? It could be better, but either way, it is this current moment. And then, as Stephen remembered for us, that idea of the gap between extrinsic learning, I'm processing things in the, you know, by the thousands of bits, right, to intrinsic learning, meaning the entire data stream that my body and brain are apprehending in real time, which is in the millions and even tens of millions, right? Allow myself to trust that. That is, that it gets into the neighborhood of what Malcolm Gladwell was talking about in Blink, although, you know, doing the Malcolm Gladwell, he kind of played fairly fast and loose with some of that. But the idea of we're receiving far more data than we know we're receiving, and that becomes the basis, not of kind of mystical, romantic intuition, but actually practical. I'm just actually, you know, I'm instead of using my telescope to look at, you know, to look at my shoelaces, I'm panning back and I'm taking in the entire cosmos. All right, so allow that intrinsic learning to take place, and that can be a really powerful way for us to, we're going to continue to get catapulted out of the now indefinitely, but what will happen is that we will A, get better at noticing it, B, get better at redirecting ourselves back to it, and C, develop a higher and higher threshold for what kicks us out of it the next time. All right. So that said, I hope that helps. I hope that gives folks some things to chew on. Let's just see. And again, if anybody has any questions or any comments, is there any specific diet tied to recovery in the neurochemistry of flow? So that was Debbie just asking a quick question. Debbie, that's a great question. I would simply say, I mean, other than completely geeking out, and if you want to geek out, go over to our good friend Dave Asprey's Bulletproof site. Those guys take biohacking supplements and all of that kind of stuff to the absolute nth degree. I would simply say, you know, number one, let's not overthink it. So deep recovery is going to be obviously sleep hygiene first and foremost, hydration. Right, good clean water, as clean and pure water as you can get, is a game changer, as deep and uninterrupted sleep in the darkest spaces possible. Those two alone are game changers. If you want to add, and then the kind of Michael Pollan, eat real food, not too much, mostly plants, right? And when he uses the word real food, he means like doesn't come in a box, right? Stay out of the center aisles of the grocery store, right? Eat things that are as close to sunlight as possible, effectively. So that alone, that gets you 90% of the way there. If you want to consider the only, I mean, I'm generally a supplement skeptic simply because most of the research doesn't support it. Just, you know, you're basically buying very expensive pee, because we don't absorb things nearly as well in those formats. And that said, I have in the last couple of years been zeroing in on beets and beet juice because of the nitrate content, as well as high-grade fish oil. And again, there are single studies that cast doubt on some of those, but those two seem useful to me. Stephen, were you going to jump in with anything on the diet stuff?
Yeah, I am for a second. And this is proof of nothing, but I have had a lot of luck. So is Dave Asprey and so is Tim Ferriss with creatine. And creatine is mostly known as a weightlifting supplement, right? And your muscles do get bigger and you retain a little more water. But both Dave Asprey and Tim mentioned to me that they have noticed tremendous cognitive improvement from it. And I have found the same thing. So I found that if I'm taking creatine regularly, when I go into the struggle phase, I actually have more of my cognitive faculties about me. I'm a little clearer. And when I'm in recovery, I seem to be able to move through it a little more quickly. So I've had some luck with creatine.
And then are you doing like weightlifter doses on that, Stephen, or are you kind of doing like a micro maintenance dose?
No, I'm doing weightlifter doses on it in that what I didn't do is an early loading phase with creatine. For weightlifting, you go through an early loading phase where you take a lot of it and then you go down to kind of a normal dosage, and I'm just taking a normal dosage. So, you know, one creatine tablet a day if I'm taking them in pill form, or one scoop of the powder a day.
Mm-hmm. Great. So I hope that helps, Debbie and anybody else that's interested in that stuff. Our general MO, what we typically recommend is common sense, in the realms of diet, in the realms of all of these things, and tend to steer folks not into the deep end of the biohacking pool, simply because you can just spin your wheels there indefinitely. And if you miss, you know, if you hit the basics, you're most of the way there. And if you miss the basics, trying to, you know, count the angels on the head of a pin, you know, you can just literally miss being in flow. You can be spending so much time measuring, managing, buying, scoping, scanning, researching that you're not in the present either. There is this future you that got there by the flip of a switch or the magic pill, and you never become that future you. You just miss a bunch of cool stuff between here and there. So our general thoughts are keep it simple, do the obvious, and pay attention to life. That's going to be a good way to go. All right, so that said, we're just going to kind of give the quick rundown and refresher of these things, and we're going to finish in 2 seconds with you guys noting which one stuck for you. Which of these practices have you done? Which of them do you get to commit to and want to make part of your life going forward? Because as we said at the beginning of the class, we're not that concerned with what you do in the next 6 weeks. We're super concerned invested in what you do in the next 6 months and the next 6 years. So this is really where we're getting to now. So if you guys remember, flow profile, what type of personality am I? What is the data set of my life biography tell me so far? And what insights do I get about how I most naturally slip into flow? Attention training, right? Huge one. We just supposed to talk about getting into the now. We just talked about building our resilience, noticing when we're out of it and recovering faster when we get there. And we've got the Art of Flow video on our website, that heart rate variability app, right, from Azumio or any of the other more sophisticated ones, you know, other than, you know, finger on your camera of your iPhone. Focused attention test, which we just went back to. Box breathing, we've just covered today and in past classes. And then just body scan, literally that sort of Vipassana style, Chogyam Trungpa, Pema Chodron discussion of, hey, do I notice what's actually going on in my body? And remember, back to intrinsic data processing in the millions of bits and the extrinsic in the thousands of bits, the body scan is just saying, hey, what if I turn the flashlight of my mind onto some of those millions of bits? What is my body noticing that I normally ignore? And respiratory awareness, again, just what is the type and quality and efficiency of my breath, right? Recovery training, again, just coming back to this and hammering it. Did I check how much I sleep? It's probably less than I think I do. Am I paying attention to my sleep hygiene? Am I taking away the things that disturb me, i.e. lights, caffeine, screen time, right, distractions? And if I really want to go for it, and there's this too is a rabbit hole you can go down forever. Am I starting to learn to pay attention even in my dream state itself with lucid dream apps or with other lucid dream practices? Okay, for those of you, and full marks for the people that did this on their own time in a remote study class, but this was one of the game-changing exercises for our earlier Flow Fundamentals courses, and the amount of learning that people reported from these is significant. So if you, for any reason, just logistics, schedules, etc., did not get the chance to do those mild, medium, spicy, what are the flow triggers I can put into place in my life, which highly encourage this just as a very fun, life-changing exercise depending on how hard you choose to play. The social triggers, if you guys remember, the big one there was my perspective is not all of reality. My perspective is at most a third. I'm going to play the game to inquire with curiosity what the other person's third is. We're going to mix our puzzle pieces to create that final third, and then that balance of that 10 points could be intersubjective, meaning between the two of us or more, or group flow state experience. And if I start playing that game versus just banging heads of I've got the whole answer, no, you've got the whole answer, we can get a lot done in that space. And then we've covered daily gratitude, and you guys did the creativity training, the MacGyver journaling that Stephen talked about, right? The idea of posing a question the night before, coming back to it in the morning and doing a consistent free write, moving the hand at all times, right? And we're actually going to return to that one again tonight as well. So that's it. Those are the big ones we've covered. What we would like you guys to do now is please get out pen or pencil, paper or keyboard, whatever's best for your guys' thought capture, and come up with the three top flow hacks that you commit to taking forward. And as we said, this is not just about the things I ought to have done. Don't write down the three you never got to and wish you had, because the evidence would suggest from your own experiment over the last 6 weeks, those actually weren't that autotelic. Those did not compel you or propel you. So Adam, you get one wild card. You get to pick one that is in that category of it sounds awesome. I think it would be really good. I didn't quite do it justice yet. But the other two have to be ones you did. And if we can go ahead and just folks that would feel like it, please go ahead and type into the bar which are your top three flow hacks. Michelle, I noticed you said sleep adjustments. I mean, now that you mentioned it, I would say that, yeah, I'm always trying to adjust my sleep. So that would probably be a baseline for me as well. Nap as much as possible, for sure. And we didn't get into strategic nappery, but that would be one, the 20-minute to 40-minute power nap. If you want to get, again, biohack geekish about it, you can do the whole slam a cup of coffee before taking a 20 to 25-minute nap, and you wake up caffeinated without having dropped into disorienting deeper sleep cycles. Okay, another minute or so, just to give everybody time to compose their thoughts. Okay. So what we'd like you guys to do now is just kind of, as we're doing all of this summation and integration, again, the intent is really to have you guys own your own flow hacking, flow training experience going forward. So not that you were doing it simply because it was in a class and we were asking you to, but that you do it because it works and it matters for you. And the idea here was for us to introduce, you know, enough to give you as broad a selection as possible and not too much in an introductory class that it would be overwhelming and it would all slip by. So if you guys remember, the free writing, the flow trigger, free write, was to pose a question, sleep on it, or live on it, right, and then respond. And to basically use that process as a chance to circumvent that prefrontal cortex, circumvent our normal waking, judging, censoring, editing self, and to try and get some of that intrinsic wisdom, get all some of that data, some of that pattern recognition, right, that will let us connect dots we wouldn't normally have access to. So if we take this entire six-week cycle and we presume that, okay, I actually came to this course with a question, and we can presume that it was something along the lines of, how might I get more flow in my life? Then we can take this entire 6 weeks as an incubation period, and we can now respond again back to that very same question we posed at the end of our flow profile, at the end of that biographical mapping exercise. So what we'd like to ask you guys to do now is, again, sit up straight on your sit bones, tall spine, right? Relax shoulders. And pose this question, which let's just say we've been living it. Let's just, for the sake of the argument, we have been living this question for 6 weeks. We have been incubating it. We have been gestating it. Now go ahead and put pen to paper. And in this case, it is preferable if you can actually manually write. I know it's a dying art. If not, don't worry about it. But let's go ahead and for 3 clean, uninterrupted minutes, begin writing. Not yet. I'll tell you when to start. And when you do, again, same instructions. Continue writing no matter what, including I don't have anything to write, or this is stupid, or I'm daydreaming about dinner. So continue writing no matter what. Do not stop to pause to think. And let's write for a clean 3 minutes, starting now. The truth is, when it comes to flow, And this reflection really is kind of sort of, you know, your own gift to yourself. It makes sense of, makes meaning of all the time and energy you've invested. Another 30 seconds or so. And again, keep going, keep writing, even if you've pulled up and think you're done. Do the free write. get to that next vein of gold. Ten seconds. Go ahead and finish up your thought or your sentence. Okay. If anybody would like to post those in the chat bar, please feel free to. And if not, then please absolutely go ahead and post those in Flow Hacker Nation. Today, immediately as we follow class, because those are such great summations, and also help and inform and inspire the rest of the community as well. So thank you guys for that. I hope that there are some insights, there is some sort of consolidation of everything you've been trying, and some clarity that is, you know, that you can sort of read what you've written and trust your voice, trust that as a declaration. But yeah, this is what works, this is what matters, and this is what I'm prepared to make time for in my life going forward. So that said, in this course, this has been, you know, almost exclusively sort of learner facing. This has been about how for you guys to find more flow in your life, learn about the role it has played, try on new ways it might play in your existence. And many of you have reached out, you know, over time saying, well, you know, what are you guys doing? What are you up to? We'd like to learn more kind of about this thing that we've just touched one part of. So we want to just give you guys an opportunity at a very kind of quick level just to understand some of the things we're up to, what's going on. So if you'd like to plug in more over time, and many of our alums have, and whether that's in their own companies, in their own coaching or teaching practices, ongoing in their role as learners, even saying, hey, I'm, you know, so fired up, how do I collaborate with you guys, how do we do more stuff, any and all of it, it's all welcome, and we just want to kind of give you guys an idea of some of the things that we care about, some of the things that we seek flow in as well, because obviously this is a mission-driven organization starting first and foremost with the people that are part of it. We love this stuff as much as you guys, and here's our best shot of how to make more of it in the world. So kind of our flagship project and initiative for 2015 is doing an angel list fundraising capital campaign for the world's first R&D flow-specific research, development, and training center. And we have some really exciting news on that on all fronts. We have been partnering both with the Bulletproof executive, Dave Asprey, who has come on as our lead investor, as well as Summit Series, which is a really interesting kind of progressive organization of artists and athletes and entrepreneurs to be putting one of the first of these in the world in Utah. At a ski resort called Powder Mountain, where those guys have recently bought. And we are also looking to, you know, continue to raise funds to put these in major cities. I will be flying over to Sydney, Australia in February, where we will be meeting with investors for an Australian one and potentially additional ones in the Pacific Rim, as well as our focus and concentration here in North America. And, you know, the idea here is to say, hey, all of us have been fundamentally cobbling this stuff together in our own homes, in our garages, in our free time, on our weekends, you know, in whatever ways it's made sense. And the idea behind the Flow Dojo is, what if we can create a purpose-specific training center that lets everybody, once you come in, train and practice embodied cognition. So it is certainly a physical space, but it's not physicality as an end game. It's a physicality as a means, which is that when we align, integrate, and vitalize our bodies, kind of back to that temporal mapping slide where we talked about vitalizing our physicality, when we do that, we tend to look, feel, and think and perform differently than if we're under-resourced. So the idea here is kind of basically a 21st century reinvention of that of Plato's original academy, right, where you work, you train, you think, you engage in gymnastic-type activities in order to hone and upgrade our nervous systems, and our circuitry, right? And, you know, everything from this place, which we call the gravity dome, which is the big one, how do we suspend the consequences of gravity? Because gravity hurts. But how do we suspend the consequences so we can learn to play fearlessly? And if we can learn to play without fear, what happens to our learning curves? Well, pretty much the same thing that happens as we're in a flow state. You know, they go through the roof. So what's the ability to repattern the choreography of body and brain? And here's just an example of our hydro domes. This is the space where, you know, starting with relaxed hot water soaking in salt water baths all the way to dynamic training and resistance training and integration in those pools. And how do we use that both to warm up as well as to rehabilitate and then go and play in the gravity dome, full tilt, full speed, and then come back. And if anybody's familiar with sensory deprivation tanks, remember one of those came up in our mild, medium, spicy challenges. Instead of being in a black box with no sensory input, what happens if you have immersive media? What happens if you have hyper-oxygenated environment? What happens after moving and training? You then come to those places with, you know, very strong sound, brainwave entrainment, et cetera. And what are the possibilities for deep relaxation into flow states themselves? So those are just, you know, artist renderings, obviously a fragment of what will actually be the case in real life, but hopefully that gives you some sense of the world we're looking to create. And just to, you know, go back and state the obvious, which is, why all that physical stuff? And what is this, you know, what's up with the Exploratorium meets Cirque du Soleil? And isn't that kind of strange? And are we really like a clown school in disguise? And no, we're not. But the idea here is that, and this came out in Stephen's work. In fact, Stephen, do you want to just talk to this and just discuss what you came across after interviewing so many of those athletes and those kind of sensory inputs that they seem to keep coming back to?
Sure. Thanks, Jamie. It's kind of dark in my office right now. I apologize for that. But when we look at action adventure sport athletes, and we were looking at kind of their most potent flow triggers, one thing that came up over and over again, right, was deep embodiment, paying attention to multiple sensory streams at once, and the three kind of easiest ways to trigger this trigger really, and it's what action adventure sports depend on all the time, is zero G's, multiple G's, and polyaxial rotation, right? So zero G's is weightlessness, multiple G's is weightedness, polyaxial rotation is rotation around one's middle. We are gravity-bound creatures, so we don't normally encounter these sensations. When we do, it grabs hold of our attention, drives it into the present moment, and drives us into flow. Obviously, not everybody is an action adventure sport athlete, right? So the Flow Dojo is designed to give everybody access to these inputs, these things. It's sort of like the way, you know, it's easier to do the focus training when you're doing box breathing. There's more to occupy your mind. Multiple G's, polyaxial rotation, and zero G's do the same thing, right? They grab hold of your mind. They shut everything else out. They drive you into the present, and they ease you into flow a lot more quickly, which is what the Flow Dojo is tapping into.
Beautiful, man. Thank you. I think that's the nicest description I've heard either of us give of that, Stephen. I really appreciate it. And just our experience this fall, right? I think it was either just before you guys kicked off your class. In fact, I think it was. But we had the opportunity to be at the Bulletproof Conference with a pop-up version of the Flow Dojo. We're just about to have a short little video to accompany our capital campaign. We will put that out on Flow Hacker Nation so you guys can check it and see some of the shots. But one of the things that was humbling, moving, deeply reaffirming, all that good stuff was how many people, and, you know, emphatic non-athletes or former athletes, deconditioned folks who have just been dealing with work, life, family, all those kinds of things, tentatively would get onto some of the equipment, the gyroscopes, the surf swings, the looping swings, and they would come alive. And you know, even to the point of being like deeply moved. And it was just this sort of giving us all permission. I mean, without getting on too much of a soapbox, I would say that these sensory inputs, zero G, multiple G's, and rotation, that they are our neurosomatic birthright. And we absolutely all deserve to have access to how they feel without having to be a pro athlete willing to risk our life or put ourselves in the hospital. So this is a little bit about how we're doing this and how we're looking to scale this. This Flow Fundamentals class is really just the baby step for the thirstiest folks who say, I want to get started someplace, and I want to get started at home by myself. But the real intention here is to create vibrant communities, much like CrossFit communities, much like any of those, or just, you know, martial arts communities of practice. where we support each other, we train our games together, and it's a hell of a lot more fun because we're doing it together. All right, so that's it. How to play more. The first is consider joining our Flow Performance class. That is our part two class of this. This is the more advanced one. We'll go into that very briefly and just give you a bit more of a sense of that. The next is, hey, if there's a friend or two or three that would you think would be interested or enjoy what you've got, or you want more playmates slash training partners, let them know. Steer them this way. You know, send them the Facebook link, whatever's easiest and lowest friction. Just connect the dots, and we'd love to reach out to them, especially if they're coming from any of our Flow hackers. The next will be, and we're just about to go live. In fact, tonight after this class, we will post the link on Flow Hacker Nation to join our Esalen course, which will be happening this May in Big Sur, California, at the historic Esalen Institute. It's a cliffside little, you know, 10 acres of true sort of just Shangri-La paradise. More like Brigadoon, I guess, than Shangri-La, but you get the idea. Natural hot springs on the cliffs. It's the New York Times once called it the Harvard of the human potential movement. It's literally the most historic epicenter of all of the, you know, of this leading edge of human development from the 1950s and Aldous Huxley and Hunter Thompson all the way through, you know, brokering, you know, hot tub diplomacy, you know, some of the initial seeds for glasnost and taking down of the Berlin Wall happened there with Soviet U.S. government relations, all the way to today where we're having the opportunity to train and share there. So, if you're remotely interested in putting this on the ground in person, that week at Esalen is going to be a magical time. Even if we had nothing useful to say, a week at Esalen is awesome. And if we have anything worthwhile saying, then it's just cherry on top. The next would be actually come and engage with us in person. In 15, we're going to be rolling out some of our in-person classes. We've been so busy traveling and speaking that these online courses is kind of what we had the bandwidth for in 14. But in 15, we are moving forward to also be launching some of our physical and in-person classes. The Flow Alpine, the first, and this is going to be an informal one, but in March, if anybody is interested in skiing and snowboarding, there will be a basically sort of a Flow Hacker gathering in Taos, probably late March. And then also, you know, give us your feedback. Help us develop this community. This is the intentions for this is to be a global movement of affiliated and connected and equally inspired Flow Hackers. And give us your feedback. Let us know who's, you know, what you want and what you want next. Because we need to make those choices, and it makes sense to do them, to make those decisions and trade-offs with your guys' input. And then, you know, lastly, hell, it's coming up for Christmas. It's been just over a year since we launched the trailer, teasing the release of Rise of Superman. Since then, all kinds of wonderful and crazy things have happened to the organization and even in the global conversation about Flow. And yeah, if you know anybody in your life that either is not ready to jump into a class, but you would like to say, hey, here's a ripping good story and there's some cool stuff inside, love to talk to you about it, you know, drop off a copy. And I think they can be as little as like $5 for an iPad, whatever they're called, a Kindle version. So not a big deal, but if you want to share the story and share some of the science and what's interesting to you, that's a great way to do it. And last and most important is actually go do this stuff. Actually go and do it. We don't want to be taking folks' tuition to have them go, eh, kind of worked. Not sure that there's a there. Right? What we want and the mission of this organization is that folks get access to this, that we really do reverse engineer the genome of Flow and open source it. And that only happens if it works. That only happens if we conduct this experiment together. And we get better and better at scaling it and sharing it with others. All right. So I just want to kind of go over this. This is going to be a quick description of what's happening in our advanced training. The intention of Flow Fundamentals is that it's just the easiest on-ramp. It's short, it's sweet, it's relatively speaking light in content, low in, you know, low commitment, meaning you can get quite a bit out of it without having to put a ton in, hopefully. Flow Performance is actually getting more serious, and this is going to cover quite a bit of the content that we'll also be covering live at the Esalen program. But the intention, many of you have seen these, and in fact Dave Asprey at Bulletproof has just launched his first monthly I don't know what those things are called, but like the subscription in a box kind of things, you know, where you pay once a month and then once a month you get a box of goodies and they kind of change over time. Well, ours is going to be a little less random than that and a lot more focused, but the idea would be everybody gets their own flow toolkit, including some of the best HRV EEG tools that are kind of just coming down the line, and we have kind of first look and first access to those. Basically everything you would need to be hacking flow in a really fantastic way in a toolkit. And then really the idea of why would I do this and why would I bother is because it's hard to change habits and to reprogram ourselves by ourselves. So the idea of commitment contracts and accountability groups, anybody studied personal training, et cetera, we do better when we have a running buddy or a swimming buddy. We do better when we have a coach. The idea is here is that actually hacking flow in our life, you would think that that's what everybody wants, but when it really comes down to it, we're masters of self-sabotage. And so by making commitment contracts, which is literally I put skin in the game, I put money up, and if I don't do what I say I'm going to do, somebody else that I really don't like, including like my anti-charity, gets that money. Those are ways to lash ourselves to the mast like Ulysses did, right? The idea of I don't trust my future self to always make good decisions, right? And speaking of which, there's a process that comes out of Harvard called the immunity to change process. What happens when I'm doing everything right and I'm still sabotaging myself or still not getting the results I want? This is a deeper dive, a deeper diagnostic to help us understand. This kind of goes from our flow biography, which is what we covered, like, oh, these are all the good places I found flow. What about our sort of our shadow biography? What are all the places I have actually driven flow away? What are all the places I've pulled the eject button on very well-intentioned practice, and how do I understand those drivers as well? Again, they said that we said this was the advanced class, and for anybody that either attended or heard about our most recent weekend workshop at One Taste up in San Francisco on flow and sexuality, certainly this is what would be considered a left-hand path, meaning this is not the full of oughts and shoulds. This is kind of the go for it and make use of it all. And clearly, sex, drugs, rock and roll are in the olden days, wine, women, and song. Those were very frequent pathways to ecstatic or peak states, of which flow is a subset. So we want to be able to speak to that and say, well, they couldn't have all been barking up a tree completely. What are some of those techniques of ecstasy that do actually serve within a more mature and disciplined flow framework? What are some of the pitfalls? But also, what are some of the potentials handled rightly and understood properly? Next, I want to talk about basically hedonism, right? The pursuit of happiness, but not in a pejorative or judgmental sense, but there are some interesting things about our happiness, and not the least of which is we tend to be genetically modified to be only so happy. And I can break both my legs in a car accident or win the lottery, and a year later, I will be more or less the same degree of happiness. That's our hedonic set point. Are they changeable? If so, how? The next would be hedonic paradoxes. The pursuit of happiness does not make us happy, right? The pursuit of struggle and meaning actually tends to make people happier than just the pursuit of enjoyment. And lastly, hedonic engineering. What are the knobs and levers, which you guys just got a tiny taste of with the mild, medium, spicy flow triggers? But what happens when I literally start tweaking my neurochemistries, playing with my neuroelectricity, shifting my hormonal profiles, right? Engaging in food, diet, substances that shift my consciousness. How do I fine-tune my flow in ways that are repeatable, safe, and get me the results that I'd like? And then obviously other additions, like our mentors, people that inspire us, we're working hard on lining up some awesome people to come, and then you're not just listening to the best that Stephen and I can come up with, you're getting to actually get it straight from the proverbial horse's mouths and really learn and understand some of the other cool ways to step outside of ourselves and to engage in either individual or group flow together. And then lastly, just let's go do it. Back to the push-ups and back to the real missions. So in service of that and in our commitment to, remember, if you ways you can help, ways you can play with us, was the last one was go and live a life of more flow. We actually want to step up and support that and basically allow anybody that's interested in carrying forward to basically get a full tuition rollover or credit from this class towards the next one, towards the flow performance class. So that's our effort to say, thank you for showing up. Thank you for doing your work. Thank you for participating in this community. And that, and we value that. That has value. And as a result, we would love to make it easier rather than harder for you to step up to the next level and keep training if that's something that interests you, if that's something that, you know, yeah, indeed, that's a light in your eye and you'd like to go for it. So I think we've covered it. In fact, why are we? Oh, here we go. So in the simplest sense, consider taking the next steps. Consider talking to others if you'd like to turn them on to it. And give us the feedback that of what you want next. What's next on your, basically, on your flow cycle? And do you want more struggles? Do you want more challenging things? Do you want to learn how to release better? All those kinds of components. And again, the mantra, if we can say it at all, it's like struggle more gracefully, recover more deeply. Let the two middle stages take care of themselves. And with that, if you guys can sign up and, you know, just go to the Facebook site, tell us what you think in the reviews. And this is our homework. Go ahead and share the review. Please go ahead and post your three flow hacks and your final free write, the truth is, when it comes to flow. And please go ahead and do that tonight, if you will. Check out the class, if you'd like. And Michael is the one to reach out to and talk to about that. And then Michael will also be sending a survey. So that's it. It's basically, give us feedback, think about playing some more, and share your learning, both on Flow Hacker Nation and with your own friends and family. And again, particularly with friends and family, let's just add the, show don't tell. Be less struggleful. Be less hijacked by your amygdala, particularly over the holidays. Be less neurotic. Do hang out in the present more. Do be grateful more, but don't tell people so much about the cool neurochemical stuff. Let people come to you and say, something's changed. You seem blah, 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 positive regard. And they go, what? And then when they ask you what it is, maybe tell them. But the idea is let's be the evidence of our practice versus telling people. In fact, there's a good Sufi saying that says, the true holy man never lets his guests see him pray. So just an invitation there for us to do the work, but let others notice the results. So with that, and on that notion of struggle more gracefully, recover more deeply, I mean, in some basic sense, it's letting ourselves be kinder to ourselves and at the same time pushing ourselves harder than we thought was possible. And this phrase from the Talmud is one that, you know, has certainly done both for me in my life and kind of strikes that balance nicely, which is we're not expected to finish the work. Right, I mean, flow, like Stephen said, a life lived endlessly in flow isn't possible, or they call it psychosis, right? But a life that has more flow in it, a life where we struggle more deeply and more gracefully, a life where we give ourselves permission to recover more thoroughly, going slow so that we can go fast, right, gets us back on the track of maximum contribution, keeps us on the path, right, that where we feel our best, where we perform our best, and where flow serves as the lodestone that guides our travel. So with that, folks, thank you guys so much for showing up. It's truly an honor to be doing this work with you guys, to hear your thoughts. And there were so many interesting comments and reflections from people accessing flow through music and their careers and their passion to, you know, re-engaging sports that they'd set aside to, you know, to all kinds of queries and reflections. So thank you guys. You guys are helping us easily as much as we are offering anything your way. And so please keep that going. And Stephen, I just want to turn it over to you to bring us home here, mate.
I just want to thank everybody for the 6-week adventure. I know it's a little bit of time to work your way through these videos, and I know the homework is hard and complicated. And hopefully it pushes all of us out of our out of our comfort spots. So hopefully we made you good and uncomfortable along the way, and maybe you're a little better for it. And thank you so much, and we'll see you on Flow Hacker Nation.